Hey, Holly.
Hey, Dave.
What is happening with yourself today on the What Difference Does It Make podcast?
Today is a first-rate day on the What Difference Does It Make podcast.
First-rate, is that referring to the person we're talking to?
First-rate, the person we are talking to is first-rate.
Why would that be, Holly?
Today's guest is Rob Juarez. He created the whole Lost 80s Live concert concept.
I remember my parents going to 50s type festivals where it was just like, got to see the Everly Brothers and Buddy Holly and, you know, Elvis Presley and blah, 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 you know, like all these artists. And then there was a thing in the 60s. There was the Tammy Show with Rolling Stones and James Brown and Marvin Gaye. So now what do we have for the 80s? When do we get to get our package deal?
We have ours. It's called Lost 80s Live, and you can see all of your favorite 80s artists at their shows of Flock of Seagulls, The English Beat, Animotion, Dramarama, Naked Eye, Stacy Q. You know the rundown. But Rob created this whole concept, and this is the 20th anniversary of the Lost 80s Live tour.
After talking to him, we realize he is the face of the Lost 80s Live. So we're going to learn all about how that happened. So we should just dive right into the virtual studios and talk with Rob Juarez. But before we do,
you will find us on social media at WDDIM Podcast and on YouTube at What Difference Does It Make Podcast.
And we're jumping right in. This is Rob Juarez of Lost 80s Live on the What Difference Does It Make Podcast.
All right.
Hey, there he is.
Hey.
Hey. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Rob. I don't know who. I'm Holly.
Oh, hi. Hi, Holly. How are you?
Good, how are you?
You look like my friend from school. All right.
Oh. You're a South Bay guy, right?
Redondo Beach. So how are you guys today, and what are we going to talk about?
Go ahead, Holly. Tell them all about us.
We are the What Difference Does It Make podcast, and we talk about 80s music, some pop culture, but mostly 80s music, a lot of K-rock music from the 80s. We talk to a lot of artists, authors that have written books about our favorite artists, artists themselves. So anything 80s, but mostly music.
Yeah, we spoke with John Easdale a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. He's the godfather of my daughter.
Is he really?
How sweet.
He is. Yes, he's the godfather of my daughter, Madison Grace Juarez. And
what is the relationship? How did that develop?
He's the godfather.
I understand that.
Yeah, he's the godfather of my daughter.
How did he get to be the godfather?
How did John come into your life?
Okay, so I met John back in early, I'm going to say, well, actually met him during the Anything period when he used to play near my home at a place called Bogart's in Long Beach.
Know it well.
And he used to play it all the time, and at Fender's all the time. That song, Anything was just so amazing. It was literally the soundtrack of my summer. And then I remember it was in one of the Nightmare on Elm Street soundtracks. Mm-hmm. I believe it was number 3. I was like, holy crap, there's my song. One day I was just walking in Los Angeles. I went to Carney's to get a chili cheese dog. I remember that. I was very young, by the way. And I saw they're playing at the Roxy. So I went and seen him at the Roxy. And I go, this guy is amazing. And I hope one day I run into him. Well, fast forward around 10 years later, I open up a booking agency. I mean, there's so much backstory, but I'm just moving that one forward. We start talking. My cousin is Sluggo Phipps from Oingo Boingo, who is the tall, sexy man.
Are we talking Oingo Boingo?
Oingo Boingo.
The sexy one in Oingo Boingo. Okay.
Yeah, well, he's my cousin, so I have to say that.
Okay, fair enough.
He might beat me.
As that's Juarez blood.
It's Sam Sluggo Juarez. But yeah, so I introduce myself to him and he goes, well, what do you do? And I go, well, my cousin's this, blah, 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 blah. We talked and I don't know, we became friends. One of those situations where we talked all the time. We go to Disneyland all the time, not Scary Farm. Mm-hmm. So as time goes by, we start working together. We were so simpatico and we were so on the same wavelength and we're both family men. And his daughters are beautiful. And out of the blue, I said, hey, man, you know, I love you so much. You're one of my best friends. Would you be the godfather to my daughter? And he just said, I would be honored. And there, the next thing you know, he's at the baptism holding my child. He's the godfather. And they have a really wonderful relationship. They go to Knott's Berry Farm all the time. They go to Disney. We play the Greek theater and they play with us, and she'll come backstage and say hi to them, but she doesn't go to the, you know, she's only 11. So, you know, she's not hanging out the whiskey, you know?
Good.
That's really sweet.
As opposed to you, from what I've heard, you were hanging out in Vegas at an early age.
Yes. So, yeah, I mean, I was probably, holy crap. It was in '70s. I mean, I was born in 67. I was probably 12 or 13 when I really look back. But one of the last few times Elvis played Las Vegas.
You were it was younger. He passed in 77. So you were.
He died in 70s. He died. My grandfather and him died the same day. Oh. My grandfather was in the obituary and I was on the front cover. Wow. So I remember that day. I'll never forget that day. I remember my father coming to my room saying, "Grandpa died." And I remember on the news the same day Elvis Presley died. That was surreal. But yeah.
Wow. That, so you're saying you saw Elvis in Vegas?
My second cousin, Johnny Sanders, he was the guitar player in Elvis's band, the backing band. It was kind of hard because I didn't believe my mom that he was, because I was an Elvis fan, being a little kid, being exposed to it from both of them. I mean, in my dad's office, he had a shrine to Elvis with all the records and the posters. It was pretty interesting. My mom one day said, "Well, you know, your second cousin, John Sanders, is Elvis's guitar player." I go, yeah, right. Don't be cruel, Mom. You know, you're wrong. Oh.
Very good.
So we got invited. I don't know how it happened. We got invited to one of his last shows in Vegas. First of all, I was very impressed. I was such a little kid, but I remember being like third row from the stage. Like, how in the hell did that happen? Mm-hmm. Like, how did you get these tickets? I mean, I knew nothing. I didn't know anything about the music business, but I'm going, wow, Mom, this cool seat, you know? I mean, there's a stage and screaming obsessed women all around us. It was pretty crazy. And I just saw my second cousin, Johnny Sanders. He came over about 3 months before that. And he goes, "Hey man, you know, gonna be in Vegas. You guys gotta stop by and see me." And I was like, I'm such a little kid. I'm going, why would I want to go to Vegas to see you? But you know, he never boasted about it. But then my mom told me. So again, we went and I see him on stage and I'm like, oh, he's such a liar. He's a liar. I knew it. He's a liar. And she goes, no, he's not. He's behind the curtain with the other musicians. I remember this. I wish I still had mine. There were little metal. It was like a coin. And it was like a backstage pass. It was a coin. It said Elvis on it. And it was a lanyard, but it was a coin, like a Vegas chip. And we walked back there. I started walking around. And sure enough, there was my 300 plus pound second cousin behind playing the guitar. They were playing Suspicious Mind. And I was like, holy shite. It's not a lie. He was back there with about 15 other musicians behind the curtain. So apparently when Elvis played, and I made a joke, I called them the Fuglies. I think he left all the Fuglies behind the curtain. So the Fuglies didn't get to be shown, but he was back there with about another dozen or so Fuglies, from tambourine to backing vocalist to a couple guys on horns. It was surreal. And again, being young, I was exposed to that early. But I knew a lot about the music business, or about musicians, because my grandfather, John Acuna, my mother's father, he played guitar with Roy Rogers. And we got some pictures, and they was there with Roy Rogers and Gene Autry together. And all three of them were playing guitar at a troupe thing. So it was pretty cool. I got to brag a lot about that in, like, you know, third grade. So it was kind of cool. I was told a lot of stories that gave me a great childhood. So being exposed to that, you know, moving forward, realizing my cousin is an Oingo Boingo when I'm in high school. And I remember my Uncle Mark, God rest his soul, he passed away at 42. He goes, "Hey man, you're not old enough, but you know, your cousin is going to be on the Gong Show tomorrow night." And I'm like, I can't watch the Gong Show. I can't watch Fantasy Island. The Gong Show, no way. My parents won't let me. He goes, "Well, let me talk to your mom." But you know, they're playing there. We got tickets, and he's playing, because he was in a thing called, he was in a troupe called the Mystic Knights of Oingo Boingo. They dressed up like clowns, and it was pretty stupid. But he'll probably hear this and smack me.
"To open our show, we bring you an act who at first may shock you, but once you get to know them, they'll just boggle your mind. The Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo.
We will now play the rarely performed Haydn trio for piano, accordion, and triangle. Thank you."
Yeah!
me welcome the winner, who are the Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingos.
But I was too young. I couldn't appreciate it, you know? So anyway, so now time goes by. I'm walking home from school, and I stop by my grandma's house, and my Uncle Mark is still there. He goes, hey, he goes, you know, your cousin just put a brand new album out. Have you heard it? It's on K-Rock. I go, what? He goes, yeah, Oingo Boingo. I'm like, oh, okay, oh, whatever. So I was listening to the Mighty 690 at the time, okay?
Me too. I'm
right. yeah, my peachy folder had Mighty 690 Rules. I was a dork, okay? Yeah. Full disclosure.
Well, that's and, why we're doing this too. We're dorks as well, so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even wearing my Pop Funko shirt of me from my tour.
Oh.
I'm a dork.
You see oh, that's you? You. Oh, that's you.
That's my Pop Funko. Yeah. I also have a keychain of a figure coming out next year. Yeah, everything. Yeah, well, because I know the owner, and because I do a lot of charity work for type 1 diabetes and for St. Jude's, I get a lot of perks. They do a lot of stuff. I got a keychain coming out. I got a lanyard, another shirt coming out. So then back to that part about the Boingo thing, he tells me, oh, they're playing the whiskey. And I'm like, oh, okay. He starts playing the music for me, and you know, it's like only a lad, you know.
The lady down the block, she had a radio that Johnny wanted oh so bad, and so he took the first chance he had, and then he shot her in the leg. But this is what she said:
only a lad.
You really can't blame him.
Only a lad.
Society made him.
Only a lad.
He's our responsibility.
Like, oh wow, this is really cool. I mean, I was listening to Rod Stewart. I went from there to like immediately going and getting to like Devo and like, you know, Boingo and Kraftwerk. Like, wow, what a different world. And I got introduced to K-Rock. I go to the whiskey and I went to Sam. I said, hey, I'm your cousin. He goes, get away from me, kid. You're not my, we're not related. I go, wow. So I go, okay. So I went, I left the area. And I remember I talked to my Uncle Mark, and I go, oh, let's go. So we went, he saw the show. And I talked to my grandma, Rosa Juarez, who she's gone to. I said, Grandma, I go, Mark says that we're related to Sam, but Sam says I'm not related to him. And she goes, she called me Lalo. Lalo, yes, he's your cousin, your first cousin. I'm like, wow, okay. So I'm calling his mom. So she called. So she calls mom.
Mom.
She called Helena. Helena Juarez. And she goes, so my son went to go see your son, and Sam says that he has no cousin Bobby. And all of a sudden, Sam is there, and he goes, Sam, your cousin's on the phone. And he goes, who? He goes, his name is Bobby. He just talked to you at the whiskey, and you said you were related to him, made him feel bad, which I never said I feel bad. And I heard him go, what? He's really my cousin? I mean, Juarez, come on. It's like, yeah. It's a very well-known name, and people try to take claim to certain things. But boom, it's like we got on the phone, and we talk, and he goes, oh, my God. He goes, I didn't know. He goes, there's so many Juarezes. I thought you were just some punk kid trying to, score some free tickets. Then next thing you know, I get invited to the S Festival, and I'm backstage with Missing Persons and English Beat and Flock of Seagulls and NXS. Oh, it was a very unique childhood. I got to experience a lot.
Try not to be too cool here. Can't be too cool at Us 83. Fish here from K-Rock. Thanks for coming down. All right, we're here to see the Clowns of Death from L.A., otherwise known as the most energetic band at Us 83, Oingo Boingo!
Then, you know, I became a musician because it's my freaking blood. I play percussion, and I started playing, you know, congas, bongos, bongos, timbales, all Latin stuff, all the doom, 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 all the nice rhythm, the Hispanic, the Latin, the Indian rhythm, all the R&B. And I met Dave Wakeling, and I said, hey, Dave, I'm a huge fan of yours. And next thing you know, I'm in general public playing percussion.
What year is this?
It was after they split up. Okay, good. The band. It was 98. Okay. I think nice. It was 98. Because I'll Take You There just came out.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the Threesome soundtrack.
Yeah.
And that ended, and then they split up. And then, so that was a time frame. Dave and I became really super good friends, and he was the best man at my wedding. You know, my first show was like playing the K-Rock, like some flashback show with The Cure and Duran Duran. And I remember walking on stage. I remember, funny, going to the bathroom as I'm doing my thing. Robert Smith stands right next to me. He starts doing his thing. John Taylor, Duran Duran, stand here, whips it out, do his thing. And I'm in the middle, and they're talking over me. And John Taylor looks at me and goes, "Hey, man, what's your name?" I go, I go by Rob now, you know, the musician Rob. He goes, "Dude, pretty good percussion. I was watching you do Tenderness with Dave. I'm a friend of Dave's." I go, "Oh, thank you." And I literally was like in awe. I was like, "Oh my God, they recognize me because I'm such a huge fan." Now I'm feeling like they're my peers, but now I'm like a total groupie boy and I don't know what to do. And yet I'm holding my penis in my hand.
Yeah, right.
Okay. This is not a good time. So, and then as I'm walking out of the bathroom, here comes Richard Butler, Psychedelic Furs, walking in. And it was just hilarious. And he's like, "Oh, so is this the boys' room? It's the meeting room, huh?" And Taylor looked at him and just go, "Whatever you like," and walked right by. It was a very weird, surreal, because all my heroes growing up, I'm now at that level. I'm now on that same stage playing with general public on these same bills with these mega stars of the 80s who I was enamored with as a child.
Oh, hey, we're talking with Rob Juarez, and we need to have a little break. We shall return shortly.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
Welcome back to the What Difference Does It Make podcast and our guest, Rob Juarez of Lost 80s Live.
I really like the business side. I started booking bands. I started calling everyone I knew I started saying, "Hey, Dave, you know, do you want me to book you?" And, but I'm still in the band at the time.
Right.
So it was kind of weird. He goes, "Oh, so you're going to double dip, huh?" He goes, "That's fine. Why don't you be the booking agent too? At least we know who's controlling the money."
Right, right.
So now I'm the booking agent for English Beats Dave Wakeling. Because it wasn't English Beats at the time. We had to call it English Beats Dave Wakeling because he did not yet have the trademark. It was still in dispute with Rankin Roger. Okay. Mm-hmm. And general public, we weren't doing anymore. He wanted to start doing English Beats because English Beats had a bigger following in the U.S. So I started booking and touring, and it just got overwhelming. I mean, the money was great. I got to go all over the country. I experienced a lot. It was overwhelming. So Dave and I parted ways as good friends. And I opened up an agency called the Boss Booking Agency because he's always calling me boss. "Hey, boss, what's on the books?" The boss book, I go, TBBA. And he goes, "That would do it." So if you were to go online right now and look at TBBA, that's my website. That's my agency I own.
Yeah.
And I handle everybody from ABC to Tony Hadley, from Spandau Ballet to Flock of Seagulls to Wayne Chung. The list just goes on and on and on, all my clients. But I'm still a musician at heart. I started playing with like Stacey Q and Trans X and The Flirts and Pretty Poison and so on and so on. And then I was like, okay, so what else? I go, you know, the 80s is pretty cool, you know? And this was in 2002. And I'm like, I'm going to start something. People aren't ready for it yet. But I talked to a good friend of mine. His name is Sean Striegel. He used to be head of Live Nation Touring, was the number one buyer of the year on Polestar 2 years in a row. And he goes, "Well, why don't we do 80s show?" And I go, "Well, it's not really 80s yet. You know, I mean, is it going to work?" And we tried it out at House of Blues when they first started. Back then, oh my God, it was so amazing. Tickets were like $12 to come see us. Like Flock of Seagulls and Emotion. You know, Berlin, and it worked. And,
this was the first show at House of Blues in Anaheim?
Well, no. The first show was actually in Las Vegas.
Oh,
it was at an outdoor amphitheater, and it flopped. The promoter didn't know how to promote it. Probably 600 people was there, and we were on a fairground that held like 10,000 people.
Oh, yeah.
And it flopped heavily.
What do you do after that? I mean, like, you look at yourselves like, do we want to continue this?
Well, what happens is I took all the criticism because you can only drop so many names when you're trying to do something. And the bottom line is, once you get your foot in the door, you have to then prove yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, you can get all the recommendations you want. I mean, like I said, I mean, if I had to put my resume, I know someone from almost every generation for the last 40 years in music. But you got to prove yourself. So I got so many doors slammed on my face and saying, "Oh, kid, you know, it's a good idea, kid, but, you know, you're young. I would not get in this business. It's not, I think you should do something else." I was told I would never succeed. I started working with Devo. I met Jerry Casale at a concert for Nike. It was called the Run Hit Wonder. And it was like Flock of Seagulls, Dramarama. I booked all the bands, but Devo. I was at the show. I didn't want to go. I was really melancholy that night for some reason. I was in a sad mood. I don't know why. And I didn't want to go. But Mike Score from Flock of Seagulls, one of my dear friends, called me, goes, "Man, come to the show. I know you're not in a good mood. Come to show." I don't want to go. He goes, "You need to come to the show." He goes, "I'm going to come drag you." So Mike Score drove to my house, picked me up, took me to the Westin Hotel where they're having the pre-meet and greet before the Nike run in the morning. I walked in there. And of course, John Easdale's in there. I already knew that. And Flock's in there. And all of a sudden, here comes walking Jerry Casale from Devo. And I'm like, wow, Devo, big fan. And I called my friend Sean Striegel. And if Sean sees this, he'll verify this. Like I said, he was head of Live Nation Touring for several years. And he calls me. I go, "Dude, your favorite band. I'm standing next to Jerry Casale." And I said to Jerry, I go, "Jerry, you're playing tomorrow." He said, "Yeah, we're playing the big stage at the end of the run where the band finish at the stage." And he's like, "Yeah, I booked it through a guy named Tim. He like works at Nike. He goes, we have no agent." I was like, oh my God. And then Sean kept saying, "Oh my God, get Devo. We got to have Devo, my favorite band. I'll give them whatever they want. I can book them in 30 clubs. Rob, you should tell them." And Mike introduced me to him again. He goes, "Well, by the way, this is Rob. Rob's my agent." And he goes, "I've been working with Rob for about 10 years now. And a good guy. I always get paid." So, you know, we're here. I go, "Jerry, this guy needs to talk to you. Because, by the way, Jerry loves working. He was the guy who always wanted to book shows. He wants to work. He likes making money. Mark is the film composer who, like, not really interested. He has to get begged by the other bands, by the other members half the time to work. And that's how it was with our relationship moving forward. So I go, please talk to Sean. And you go, who? I go, Sean runs all the House of Blues. He goes, oh, wow, it's a great place. And they start talking. Hey, this is Sean. Hey, my God, Jerry, blah, blah. He goes, I would love to have you play my stuff. He goes, who's your agent? And Jerry's like, Rob Juarez. And I was like, holy crap. So now I'm the agent for Devo. And that lasted for about 7 years. And that was an amazing experience in my life. And not only financially beneficial, it was just, I learned a lot. But in that time frame, Sean was booking Devo everywhere across the country. And I was traveling a lot with him because I also became not only the agent, but kind of like a liaison. The band was very mistrusting, you know? So I made sure all the payments came, everything to be taken care of. So Sean says, why don't we do the Lost 80s again? And we do it, but we do a big place. Well, I said, oh, I'm nervous. He goes, no, Devo a headline and we'll do it at the Coors Amphitheater, Live Nation. It's Fiddler's Green in Denver, Colorado. And I said, really? He goes, yes. And he goes, let me get you. He goes, who can you get on the bill? So we had like Flock of Seagulls, Dramarama, English Beat, Missing Persons, Real Life, and Devo headlined it. And it was called Lost 80s Live. So if you were to go on your website, a website, and you were to look at, punch up like Devo, Lost 80s Live, you would see the art. And it was amazing. That show did 17,000 people almost sold out. And that right there, that show put us on the map.
did Mark design the artwork for that poster?
No, we had a guy called the Mongoloid. And the Mongoloid used to design everything.
For Devo? Because he's called the Mongoloid? Yeah. Like, okay, this, he's got to work for Devo.
You know, that's kind of funny. If that's really why, but he was called the Mongoloid. He designed everything for them, and it put Lost 80s on the map.
This was what year?
2004, maybe.
Okay. All right. Yeah, so this was 2 years after. So the first one you did was 2002 in Vegas. Huge
flop.
Flopped. And then you.
Huge. But that was it, man. It that was up and running. And then we started playing bigger and bigger places. And
but you like to I mean, we're saying this is the 20th anniversary. That first show though was a huge flop. You don't want to you want to keep that in the family, that show in the family.
You know, the bottom line is my heart was in it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't done the right way. It's like anything you do. You know, although I'm an agent and I own a brand, I have an agent for me and they're Universal Attractions out of New York. Okay? They handle most of my shows. I book some of them, like I book a Saratoga Mountain Winery. I booked Humphreys in San Diego and a couple others because I've been doing it for so long. I just, why give the commission away when it's already in my pocket? Stupid. Right. because we make a lot of money on these shows. So why would I give that kind of money away, you know, for free when I could just sign the paperwork myself? It's great because they're a huge team, but I try to look at everything as like, okay, so I failed here. It just wasn't a good thing. People told me to not do it. People told me to pound sand. But I didn't give up. Yeah. So I consider even the first show, which I consider a failure, emotionally, I consider it a success.
You probably learned more in that show than at any other show.
And it's an anniversary. It still took place.
It is. So it took place. And I have to tell you, the date, if I'm not mistaken, it was like the second week in August. Technically, the Maverick Center in Salt Lake City is officially my 20 years.
Okay.
on that game. Oh. That's why I look at it. So, you know, like I said, I got to look at my failure also as a success because it took me to where I am now. If I listen to those who said, hey, buddy, pound sand, it's not, you don't know what you're doing, my life may have been a bit different, you know? Yeah, I followed my own heart and didn't let people tell me I couldn't do it. And I just did it. And here I am today, probably 480 plus shows in 20 years. Cause you know, we only play during the summer. And you know, we've had everyone on our bill from ABC to Boy George to Devo, Cutting Crew, Wang Chung, Nina Hagen, Scandal, Berlin, Thomas Dolby, The Escape Club, The Vapors.
Flock of Seagulls and Dramarama are always on the bill. Is that a guarantee?
No. Well, Flock of Seagulls is always on the bill because Mike Score always wants to play.
That's great. And that's what you want.
It'd almost be funny to not want to have someone on your bill who's a household name and they do parodies of him on Saturday Night Live. That would be silly. So this is why I have him. And plus, we're really good friends. I mean, we go back. So, you know, again, there's so much in between that. Like, you know, I worked with the Poor Man on K-Rock Radio as an intern, starting out learning the business.
I'm sorry.
Worked with Richard. Yeah, I know. But you know what, though? Everything, just like my gray hair, is a stepping stone.
I'm sure that was a learning experience as well.
And the experience, makes things easier.
When I worked with him, we used to book concerts at the Whiskey, and we called it the Poor Fest. Mm-hmm. Okay, the Poor Fest, the Whiskey. It was like 93, 94, 95. And I was the first person to get No Doubt to play the Whiskey. No Doubt had their album with a song Trapped in the Box. And how we were able to get them on the show or to get to play with us, because they were playing Glam two nights before, was that we said, I'll tell you what, you have a new album? Well, you want to come on Loveline? Oh my God, that would make or break this. Well, then we need you to play for us at the Whiskey. And they played for free at the Whiskey. So we wound up doing like No Doubt, Fishbone, The Untouchables, and Dave Wakeling. Okay.
That's a good bill. That's an LA 90s bill. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. And the line, and we fit 900, I mean, I'll never forget this, 926 people in that room. Okay, I'll never forget that day because we broke the record until Lemmy had his birthday party. Yeah. And then, but you can't count the fact when Van Halen was there. That's not in the whole running because that's a whole different animal. But as a concert, like for this, it was insane.
Yeah.
But we had 927 in the room. That was a surreal part. I mean, I still have photos of it. Actually, I'm glad we're talking about it because it reminds me of where I came from, like how this all started. Like without that, I would not be here because everything is a stepping stone. I truly believe that. I was very lucky. I've had fun.
So who's on your wish list? I'm sure you get asked that a lot.
Okay. So this year is the 20th anniversary. And the irony is I've been asked this question several times. I have done every band I've wanted on the bill has come and done it for me. Mostly because of who I am and what I've done and who I know and the connection that we all have. We're all connected. We all know one another due to either family or because we spent many years touring together. So as long as you keep the ego at bay, everybody wants to work with you.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, one of my wish lists and someone who I really loved a lot, and unfortunately, it was really heartbreaking, Big Country. I had an opportunity to book them across the country with Sean Striegel, and they were going to do a little comeback. And I remember we had all these dates booked, and we were getting ready to do these shows. And I get a phone call that Stewart had died. First of all, my jaw dropped, tears rolled down my face because he was such a beautiful soul. That was my bucket list to work with Big Country. As a kid, that was my band. The album, The Crossing, forget the commercial songs, but just the album itself. I mean, it put my hairs to pop up on my arm. They, you know, Chance, you know, Young Man, Harvest Home, you know, these were like some amazing, Big Country and Fields, you know, great song, but there were so much more than that.
Did you happen to be at their show at the Palladium? I went to that show.
I was. Wire Train opened.
Right. Okay. So what was unique about, do you remember what they did in their set list that was like, that freaked me out?
A lot of it freaked me out because I never heard Wonderland before and they played Wonderland.
Okay.
Okay. And the fact that they opened and closed within a Big Country.
That's it.
No band has ever done that. Ever. Jumping up and down, and I knew being emotional because that was my band. And I remember, I want to meet him. Am I going to be a little groupie? I'm going to be a groupie. And I got past. I started like using names. Well, my cousin started Oingo Boingo. I was young. I was stupid. You should know who I am because they're never going to play here again. We never played the Palladium. They only played the Universal Amphitheater. You know. Yeah. But I said that like out of stupidity, just being. I was young. But I remember security guy goes, I like Oingo Boingo. Go ahead and go. Oh. So I met Stuart, and he had a son with him, and he was like this big. He was carrying him, and I took my mom's Polaroid camera with my backpack. And I took the picture of his son and him. I still have that picture to this day on my wall in my office. In his eyes, I mean, I read people really well. I'm a people person. I love to talk. I like to reminisce. I love people in general. Even if you harm me or you make me feel bad, I'm still going to admire you because there's something that attracted to me. Me to you to begin with. Maybe there's like that flaw you have that I didn't realize, but that's my problem. You know, when I met him, it was this emotion in his eyes. And I remember looking at his son and I just said, that man is so beautiful and he has such a big heart and the songs touched me. And that was my favorite band. And when I had the opportunity to work with him, I was on cloud nine. And when he died, I felt a piece of my life died with it. He was the most important thing to me growing up. It actually brings tears to my eyes because he was such an amazing person. I'll never forget him. I mean, I still pay homage to him every time on his birthday, and I write about him and I put pictures of him all over my social media and to say what an amazing man this was and what pain he must have felt to have to take his life. Mm. That was my bucket list and never happened. I love working with people, but I don't put my heart into my bucket list anymore because last time I did, I had a tragic outcome.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a lot of work. I mean, look, yeah. I come across very positive and very confident and of what I'm doing and a little like, you know, like airheadish because like, even though we're talking, I have a million things running through my head. I have a tour that starts in 14 days. I have thousands and thousands of tickets sold across the country. I'm dealing with press. I'm dealing with production and backline and catering and travel and hotels and all this stuff goes to my phone. It doesn't stop. Like the 1st of July, we call it Hell Week. The first week is when everybody wants to start advancing the shows, and it hasn't stopped. Even as we're talking, which is a lovely conversation, I've had 61 text messages on my phone.
Yeah.
And I just can't mentally can get through them and have a conversation with you because I got to focus on what they want. And it's kind of funny. I made a joke with Richard Blade. It's like, you know, Sweet 16 was my 16th anniversary, which was really fun. Okay. And we had 16 bands play. We did Las Vegas, the event center. The 17th anniversary, well, kind of started falling apart because of the pandemic. Shows were starting to get postponed a little bit. The 18th technically happened, but then got canceled again, got postponed. The 19th, which was last year, we postponed them and moved into December. We did we did two Dallas, and we did Saratoga, Humphreys, the Greek. And so the 20th, it was a lot of pressure. The last 3 years was a lot of pressure with cancellations. And, you know, you can't just reschedule this. I mean, this is the government that we live in, we live with immigration. Bottom line is, we're in a pandemic. These bands lost all their visa fees and everything.
Yeah.
And they try to make them pay again. They kept the money. We couldn't come. And they were heartless. So some of the bands couldn't afford to come back because immigration attorneys took all the money for the year we didn't do the tour. And because there was no money coming in, they couldn't afford to do the immigration process mm-hmm. all over again. So it was crucial that most of them did this year that were local. That's why with the 20th anniversary, we are celebrating the special treat. The big joke with Richard Blade was Sweet 16, 17 was going to be the Sexy and 17, like the Stray Cats tour, you know? The 21st anniversary will be, we're going to call it Finally Legal.
Nice. It's always fun to see who's playing these things. And maybe you can get the Stray Cats for next year. I'm sure that's on your list.
I can't say anything.
Okay. Right.
Say
nice try, Dave.
I'm trying.
I will tell you this. When I say things, Dave, for some reason, the gods are against me.
Okay.
So I've learned when I keep my mouth shut, beautiful things happen. We have beautiful things happen when I shut my mouth.
Nice.
That's all I can say. Yeah. You can't be too confident. There you go. We'll leave it at that. And this was a lot of fun. I mean, we talked about a lot of stuff. I kind of got a little backtracked because there's so much. I mean, it's weird. I've had so many interviews. I kid you not, in the last 10 days, and I've been asked questions I've never been asked before. It's kind of taken me deep back from like when I was in high school. Did I know I was going to do this? Did I know this was like my future?
Yeah.
And it was like, how would I know I was going to build a company? How did I know I was going to form Lost 80s Live? I didn't know my future. I mean, I was listening to the Mighty 690. I had no idea in the world that, you know, oh my God, my cousin's in Lingo Boingo. I've asked all these questions, and it actually, believe it or not, even the big country thing where I get very sentimental, it brings up a lot of, I mean, I'm 54 and 55 in October. I mean, I've been doing this since I was like 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just say this. I lived the dream. I was a little boy. I got to go on stage. I got to play music. I got to meet a lot of girls. I got to, you know, I got pictures taken of me everywhere. I've been in lawsuits. I mean, it's a real business, you know?
Yeah.
But I do appreciate the interview. I'm so blessed to do this. So it was just very nice to be able to talk about the past with you guys. It's good for my soul to just remember where I came from.
Glad to provide that forum.
Come back anytime.
Thank you so very much. Go answer your texts.
Yeah.
Go hug your daughter.
Yeah. Again, I just want to thank you so much for letting me talk to you and letting me unleash my past of how I started. It was cheaper than my therapist.
Fair enough.
So thank you.
All right.
Bye guys.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay, Holly, I've learned that it's hard work to put shows together. It's not simple. This seems harder than when you go to IKEA and try to put something together and, you know, you feel like, I got this. It's a little bit harder than that, isn't it?
It's quite a bit harder than that, I think. He has done a phenomenal job with this. It just seems like things have to be changed on the fly. There are issues with bands, as he mentioned. Visas, getting the artists here, traveling around. It's got to be a ton of work. And if you have 6, 10, 18 bands on the bill, imagine dealing, you know, just like juggling all the time, balls in the air all the time.
You're a mom. Can you imagine if you had, let's say you had 18 children, and you decide to go on a road trip around the country. Could you do that?
Nope.
Exactly. Okay. Now, pretend they're all 21 and they drink and they want things. And they're petulant children. What do you do?
He's so great. He seems to have such a great attitude about it. He really seems to love what he does. He's passionate about it. And he's our age, so he's obviously into the music.
He clearly loves what he does. And so that's the lesson that we've learned. Like, sometimes you just got to step back and like, you know what? If I was 16 and someone told me this is what I would be doing with my life, I would be perfectly happy with that. And I would be thankful that this is what I do. And that's exactly what Rob's story is. I think it's a good story. I like it.
It's a great story. And by the way, don't you love what you do?
I do. When I was 16, I was like, I want to be on a podcast. I want a podcast. I love podcasting. So thank you to Rob Juarez for letting us into his world and opening up some doors and letting us know what exactly goes on to put on one of these shows. It's a wonderful talk.
It's a fascinating process.
Yes. If you want to see what Rob looks like, standing next to us in squares, then subscribe to our YouTube page. How'd they do that, Holly?
You can find us at What Difference Does It Make Podcast, and you will find outtakes. So you can, yes, you can see Rob, and you can feel how animated he is.
So yeah, fun things on YouTube, fun things on social media, where you can find us at WDDIM Podcast. We also have WDDIMPodcast.com in case you want to see all our episodes. And, you know, you love this and you want more. You want to hear what John Easdale and John Marama from Lost 80s Live has to say, then come aboard. Thank you to Pantheon Podcast. We are a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast family. We have new episodes every Friday, so please subscribe. And until next week, this is Dave.
This is Holly.
Check you later.
Over and out.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frunino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.